10:15, Having arrived, we call the House Tax Committee to order. I think we're like one member short of a quorum, so we'll officially call to order when we do have a quorum, but we now have a quorum. I'll officially call the House Tax Committee meeting to order. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of Thursday, April 12th, 2018. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Before we get going, we're very fortunate today to have with us the Commissioner of Revenue and Mr. Cummings with us. Just to kind of lay out an agenda for the day, we're going to give the department the time they need for a presentation. Then we may have a few member questions. We'll kind of see how it goes. And then we will go into testimony. And then after that, we will wrap up the committee with any questions that members have of any of the testifiers or the department or staff, nonpartisan staff, or whoever you have a question for. But before we go into that, and we are officially in business here today, I would like to congratulate Representative Paul Thiessen for being named to the Supreme Court of the great state of Minnesota. Governor Dayton just had a press conference to make that announcement, so we will congratulate him officially from the Tax Committee, and when you see him today, you do whatever you want to do, but I'm going to give him a big congratulations. That's a really big deal. So Governor Dayton has appointed former Speaker, current member Paul Thiessen to the Supreme Court. Okay, so we will get right into, I will move House File 4385. Are there any amendments? There's an A18 amendment, so that is my amendment?
Yeah.
Or is that somebody else? So that would get in there, or the department would like. Okay, so I will move the A18-0764 amendment. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the order in the shape that the author prefers. So with that, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Cynthia Bowerly. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We are happy to be with you today, April 17th, which is tax filing deadline. For anyone who has not yet filed their taxes, you have until midnight to do so. Not looking at anyone in particular, Mr. Chairman, but just making that public service announcement for everyone's benefit.
Thank you very much.
So it's been a busy day already, Mr. Chairman. Before we get started talking about the governor's tax bill, I did want to take a moment to address the press release that was issued before this committee met regarding the incidence analysis that was issued yesterday by the department. I want to make clear that this analysis, as historically the incidence analysis comes from the Department of Revenue, lays out the implications of making any tax changes. When we have been discussing the governor's bill, we have been very clear that this raises no taxes on wage earners. It cuts taxes for over 2 million Minnesotans, and this analysis doesn't change or contradict any of that. There are changes, of course, to corporate rates, to corporate tax structures that under the incidence analysis are described to flow through to consumers. I think that is... I don't take any issue with the incidence analysis as it has been done historically in Minnesota. I would, however, note that as we're observing what happens as happening at the federal level with respect to corporate rates, the corporate rate cut that happened at the federal level is flowing largely to dividends for those shareholders, is not resulting in any changes to consumer prices, or largely to wages that individuals who are employed by those companies receive. And so I think when we consider the changes that are happening in the corporate proposals offered by the governor, it's important to consider what's happening at that federal level. And at the federal level, we don't see corporate tax cuts resulting in lower consumer prices. So I think it is an important question to ask whether those any tax changes with respect to corporations, whether they would result in any increases for consumers as well. I'm just not sure whether that trend would go in both directions. So, Mr. Chairman, we'll be happy to answer any further questions on that. Overall, the governor's tax proposals with respect to responding to the federal bill very progressive. The extension of the provider tax makes that on balance about neutral in terms of the current level of regressivity in our current tax code. Minnesota's tax code is slightly regressive, as is the case with most state tax systems. There's no state tax system that is progressive. And over the governor's 8 years in office, the bills that he has enacted have made our tax code much more progressive than they were when he took office. So, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to answer any further questions in response to that release that was issued this morning from your office.
Thank you. And I apologize for this, Commissioner, but I'm going to take a liberty here to find out. I have my list of testifiers. I'd like to know if there is anyone else that would like to be on the list for the Davids bill or with concerns. We have Nan Madden on here. Anyone else? I talked to Cap O'Rourke, so we're good there. Okay, just so I can kind of figure out the time here and so forth. Okay, so with that, to my bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Governor Dayton's tax bill continues his long-held commitment to tax fairness for hardworking Minnesotans while preserving a responsible, balanced budget for our state's future. The 2017 federal tax law, signed into law late last year, overwhelmingly favors big corporations and the richest Americans. The federal tax law cut taxes by 40% for corporations, totaling 92% of the net total cost of the bill, or $1.35 trillion. Nearly 50% of the new individual federal tax cuts go to the richest Americans, those earning over $250,000. The governor and the legislature face an important choice about how Minnesota will respond to the federal bill. The decisions made this session will impact state taxes for Minnesota individuals, families, and businesses. If the legislature does nothing to respond to the 2017 tax law, individual state income taxes will increase by almost $60 million for over 300,000 Minnesota families. If the Minnesota legislature fully conforms or mechanically conforms to the federal law, individual state income taxes will increase over $425 million for over 870,000 Minnesotans. Governor Dayton's proposal takes a different approach. Minnesota families would see $319 million in tax relief, and over 200 million Minnesota families would see a tax cut. Mr. Chair and members, you will recall from the department's presentation in January that the federal tax law made many changes to tax rates and base provisions. We will not go through those in detail today. We assume you all remember in depth the presentation we shared with you then.
Yeah, I think that was February.
It was February when you all came back. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we do know is if we do nothing this session, Minnesotans will face a very complicated tax filing system next year, and so we are hopeful that we can work through the rest of session to come to an agreement around a proposal for responding to the federal tax bill. Governor Dayton's bill would protect hundreds of thousands of Minnesota families from state increases caused by the 2017 federal tax law. His plan would separate our state income tax system from the federal government.
And, member, do you have that in your packet also?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we have our technology set now. The governor's plan would simplify and cut taxes by over $100 million for farmers and small businesses for their equipment expenses. And Governor Dayton's proposal would repeal the tax breaks enacted last year in the Minnesota legislature that have threatened the long-term stability of our state's budget. It would roll back tobacco breaks for big tobacco companies, huge property tax cuts for corporations, and estate tax cuts for the wealthiest Minnesotans. I'll give you a quick high-level summary of the governor's bill, and then we'll go into some detail. The governor's bill creates a new personal dependent tax credit for all Minnesotans. The governor's proposal would create a new non-refundable tax credit for individuals earning less than $140,000 and married tax filers earning less than $280,000 per year. The new tax credit will provide $60 in a non-refundable credit and will be available for over 1.9 million eligible Minnesotans. He expands the working family credit to families, particularly larger families, and allows it at younger age levels so that someone who is 21 years of age will be able to access the credit. The governor's proposal preserves important deductions that Minnesota families rely upon. The proposal will align many business changes to the federal tax law and provide for the same treatment of foreign income at the state level. And finally, it addresses the three provisions from last year's tax bill. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. The federal tax law prioritized corporations and wealthy over working families. 92% of the net cost of the bill went to a 40% reduction in the federal corporate rate. While cuts to the corporate rates were permanent, rate reductions and increased credits for individuals were temporary. The governor took a different approach and focused his bill on individuals and families across the state. The bill provides $319 million in tax relief to over 2 million families in Minnesota. This is consistent with the governor's approach over the past 7 years, during which he has offered hardworking families tax relief by proposing to expand the working family credit, the child dependent care credit, homeowner homestead credit refund, and the renter's credit. The bill provides a new $60 refundable credit for each individual on a return, and so a married couple with two children would receive a $240 reduction in their tax liability. Over 1.9 million taxpayers would benefit. And as you can see, the phase-outs are begin at $90,000 in income for individuals and reach those earning $140,000 or more. This will allow Minnesota families to help their budgets as we preserve the state's budget. The bill also expands the working family credit. Low- and middle-income families have been dealing with stagnant incomes and increasing costs of living. So this will provide $329,000 Minnesotans and their families an average of $160 tax cut by expanding particularly this benefit increases the credit for families with three or more children. As you can see on the chart on the next page, it increases the amount of the credit and the income at which it phases out. Turning next to the proposals that specifically respond to the federal tax law changes. Minnesota faces an important choice when responding to the new federal tax law. As you all know, we start our code at this point with federal taxable income, which ties us to a number of provisions in federal law. And this may have made a lot of good sense in about 30 years ago, but at this point, the governor is proposing that we move Minnesota to adjusted gross income as our starting point. This change will give Minnesota more control over our tax code moving forward and enable us to preserve the personal exemption at the state level, preventing a significant tax shift. The 2017 federal tax law enacted by President Trump and Republicans in Congress repealed or reduced many itemized deductions that Minnesotans rely upon. Governor Dayton's proposal would preserve those deductions for state taxes. Most significantly, the new law placed a cap on the federal, state, and local deduction, negatively impacting Minnesota taxpayers. To help stem the impact of those lost benefits, the governor's proposal would allow Minnesotans to continue to subtract the full amount of their Minnesota property taxes. And the governor's proposal would allow taxpayers to take the standard deduction at the federal level and itemize deductions at the state level. You can see here the list of some of the important benefits preserved by the governor's plan listed here. They include unreimbursed employee expenses, casualty losses, charitable donations, and others. Preserving these benefits will protect Minnesota families from unfair tax increases. For example, an employee who travels from different sites for their job does not get reimbursed by their employer, would get to keep their state tax exemption on those expenses. Under this plan, a worker that is required to travel from different sites would get to retain that deduction for their qualified expenses. Currently, about over 100,000 Minnesotans benefit from this deduction, saving an average of $419 annually. Under Governor Dayton's plan, a student or family that pays tuition for higher education and career training could continue to deduct those expenses at their state taxes. About 27,000 Minnesotans benefit from this deduction, saving an average of $96 annually. The property tax deduction is an important deduction for Minnesotans. The federal bill limits this itemized deduction for state and local taxes to $10,000. About 40,000 Minnesotans benefit from this deduction, saving an average of $500 annually. Under Governor Dayton's plan, homeowners would continue to be able to deduct mortgage insurance premiums for their qualified residents. Currently, about 70,000 homeowners see this tax break, averaging $94 annually. Under Governor Dayton's plan, workers who move to a new location for a job would still be able to deduct qualified moving expenses, and currently about 61,000 Minnesotans benefit from this subtraction, saving an average of $150 annually. And finally, charitable donation deductions are important to many charities and to many Minnesota families. The federal tax changes will result in fewer Minnesotans itemizing their charitable deductions. Under the governor's plan, Minnesotans would still be able to itemize their charitable deductions, their charitable contributions. A family that, for instance, donates $400 per year and takes the federal standard deduction but itemizes deductions from Minnesota could keep deducting that amount from their state taxes. And finally, Mr. Chairman, when hurricanes or tornadoes, wildfires, and other natural disasters happen around the world, Minnesotans often give generously. Governor Dayton's proposal would match federal changes by removing the limits on the amounts Minnesotans can deduct from their state taxes for contributions for these disaster relief efforts. And finally, Mr. Chairman, I would note that the governor's proposal would allow taxpayers to take the standard deduction at the federal level and itemize deductions at the state level, which would prevent a tax increase of $59 million on 300,000 Minnesota families. Turning next to the proposal's response to the federal bill for businesses, there's significant tax relief in the governor's proposal, first by allowing full 179 expensing. The 2017 federal tax law allows businesses, especially small businesses and farmers, to quickly deduct their expenses on the equipment they need to grow their operations. Typically in Minnesota, we have had an 80% add-back. The governor is proposing to allow the full treatment for 179 in his proposal. This would be the first time Minnesota would be in full conformity since 2005. Under the new law, Section 179 expensing election is modified to increase the maximum that may be deducted up to $1 million, up from $500,000 in the previous law. That dollar amount is reduced dollar for dollar to the extent that the total cost of 179 property placed in service exceeds $2.5 million, and this is up from $2 million under the previous law. Governor Dayton's proposal would also match the federal changes for a number of additional business provisions that would simplify record keeping and tax filing. For example, the governor's proposal includes conforming to a number of changes, most significantly allowing more businesses, especially pasture businesses, to use different types of accounting methods to simplify filing and reduce their taxes. Next, the proposal would conform to the net interest deduction, which is now limited to 30% of income for larger businesses. Right now, state law allows businesses to deduct 100% of their interest, as did federal law in 2017. The new federal tax law changed the law for businesses, limiting the amount of interest that they can deduct, and the governor's proposal would conform to this part of new law and would also allow businesses with gross receipts of less than $25 million per year to continue to deduct the 100% of their interest, ensuring that smaller businesses can take advantage of additional tax benefits and more flexibility. The 2017 tax law limited the net operating loss deduction for a given year to 80% of taxable income, effective with losses beginning in year 2018. The governor's proposal would conform to this change while maintaining our state 15 years limitation on net operating loss carryforwards. And Mr. Chairman and members, with respect to the foreign income provisions of the federal law changed, the governor proposes conforming to those. The federal law imposed a one-time tax on businesses that have stored their profits on foreign subsidiaries overseas. Beginning in 2018, businesses will be allowed to bring that money back to the United States without paying an income tax for a limited period of time at a much lower tax rate. The governor's proposal would treat that income in the same way. This would allow for both the all three types of income, that repatriated income, global intangible, low tax income, foreign-derived intangible income, to be treated in the same way. First, that they would be treated to the dividend received deduction, and then, of course, apportioned to Minnesota pursuant to our single-factor sales system. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm now going to turn it over to Mr. Cummings to describe some additional changes in the tax bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. Please state your name, who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, I'll start out with some business tax items that are in the bill, starting with Article 3. This is in the bill on page 54 and summarized on page 8 of the summary. Minnesota's Angel Tax Credit provides a 25% credit to investors or investment funds that put money into new technology startup companies. This initiative has helped over 345 Minnesota businesses in growing industries like software, biotechnology, and medical devices. It helps them secure needed startup capital. Governor Dayton's proposal would increase the Angel Tax Credit funding by $10 million for tax year 2018, allowing more investors to help build and expand new businesses and create jobs. As high-tech startups look outside the confines of the traditional hubs like Silicon Valley, Minnesota has the opportunity to provide incentives that will encourage job growth and technical expertise here in the state. The Angel Tax Credit Program has resulted in over $421 million in private investment in Minnesota startups, leveraged by the state's issuance of $101 million in tax credits to angel investors. Investment dollars raised with the Angel Tax Credit Program comes not just from Minnesota investors, but increasingly from non-Minnesotans, with over 50% of the investment dollars in 2007 coming from non-Minnesota investors. The program spurs economic growth and builds on Minnesota's existing ecosystem of high-tech, high-innovation companies. Mr. Chair, I'll move on to the corporate tax reform provisions in Article 4. They are in the bill on page 57 and summarized on page 8 of the summary. This is a grouping of proposals intended to make the tax system more fair, transparent, and equitable. The first a proposal on preventing tax evasion. This restricts transactions or organizational structures that are structured only to avoid tax and do not serve a business purpose. This proposal includes a penalty for using transaction or organizational structures that are put together only to only serve to avoid taxes. Second proposal deals with the base year percentage for the research and development credit. This proposal would allow taxpayers to use a 16% base year percentage for calculating their research and development credit when records are no longer available for those base years. The proposal intends to allow the credit even when a taxpayer cannot produce documentation to substantiate the base year activities for increasing research activities. Currently, when the base year records are not available, the credit can be disallowed because of lack of the documentation. The third proposal deals with the apportionment sales factor and to exclude derivatives. This proposal would add a provision to specifically exclude derivative sales from the income apportionment computation. Currently, Minnesota does not have any statutes or methods that specifically address how to apportion this type of income. The dealing of derivatives is usually high volume, which skews the apportionment percentage of total income to be attributed to the state. The next proposal deals with mutual fund manager apportionment. This would require all entities that manage mutual funds to apportion their income consistently based on where the mutual fund shareholders are located. Under current law, a corporation that manages a mutual fund apportions its income based on where the shareholders are located. But if another type of entity, such as a partnership or LLC, manages a mutual fund, then its income is apportioned based on where the mutual fund is located. So taxpayers have set up organizational structures to exploit this inconsistency. The next proposal deals with the dividend received deduction on debt finance stock. This proposal excludes dividend received from debt finance stock when calculating the dividends received deduction. For instance, a corporation generates income and pays tax on that income. The remaining profit may be distributed to stock shareholders as dividends and is included in the shareholders' taxable income. Shareholders who are corporations are allowed a dividend received deduction of 70 or 80% of dividends received from another corporation to limit the amount of perceived double taxation on the income from the first corporation. When a shareholder is a corporation that purchased stock by incurring debt, the interest paid on that debt is allowed as an expense deduction. The interest expense is in addition to the dividend received deduction allowed on dividends received from debt finance stock. So, Mr. Chair, the net effect is that the interest expense allowed as a business deduction plus the dividend received deduction may exceed the amount of dividends received. So in this case, the taxpayer may report a net loss when actually net income is realized. This proposal excludes dividends received by holding debt finance stock from the dividend received deduction to prevent reporting a net loss when net income is realized. Mr. Chair, the next proposal deals with fairness in insurance taxes. This proposal matches the insurance premium tax rates for non-admitted surplus line policy, whether purchased directly through a broker A surplus line policy is the same no matter how it is purchased. But under current law, the tax on directly procured policies, which with a rate of 2%, is lower than the tax on policies purchased through an agent, which is at 3%. The taxpayers that benefit the most from this difference are large corporations with in-house insurance divisions available for direct procurement. The proposal would mean that about 35 Minnesota taxpayers that directly procure would pay 3% instead of 2%. About 1,600 are subject to the 3% rate currently under law. Mr. Chair, finally, the qualified data center sales tax exemption. This proposal limits the exemption to computer software that exclusively operates, maintains, or monitors the enterprise information technology equipment used at the data center, rather than all computer software generally qualifying. Enterprise information technology equipment is defined as computers and equipment supporting computing, networking, or data storage, including servers or routers and routers. Some of examples of what would continue to qualify under this revised definition would include computer software that operates, maintains, or monitors technology equipment used for temperature control infrastructure, power infrastructure, for transformation and distribution or management of electricity used for the maintenance and operation of a qualified data center. This exemption from sales tax was first enacted in 2011, at that time with refunds being paid beginning after July 1st of 2013. It was estimated to cost about $24 million in 2014 and about $4 million in 2015. This exemption was modified in 2013. Square footage requirements and investment thresholds were reduced and the qualification period extended. At this time, the changes to the exemption were estimated to cost approximately $8 million per year. The most recent tax expenditure report anticipated that the qualified data center exemption would cost about $70 million in fiscal year 2018. The most recent claims for this exemption include significant amounts for computer software. While the inclusion of software is not new, the amount claimed for refund has significantly increased. In December 2017 alone, refund claims exceeded $50 million, and about 55% of those claims were attributable to computer software. This exemption has grown well beyond its intended purpose, mainly due to the unexpected growth in claims surrounding computer software. Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to move on to Article 5, which is on page 71 of the bill and summarized on page 9 of the summary. This proposal deals with the change in tobacco products tax. Governor Dayton's proposal would crack down on tobacco tax evasion by some taxpayers, create fairness among those who sell similar tobacco products, standardize taxation of vapor products, and improve public health by reducing access to cheap tobacco, particularly among younger Minnesotans. This recommendation would reduce contraband tobacco products in Minnesota by standardizing the taxation of vapor products, creating a vapor products manufacturing license to change the current point of taxation. establishing a process whereby the Department of Revenue can revoke a retailer's cigarette or tobacco license. Beginning with moist snuff, it would require tax stamps to be placed on other tobacco products similar to the cigarette tax stamp. Expanding invoice retention requirements for cigarette and tobacco products and establish civil penalties for violation of those requirements. Would increase the license fees for cigarette and tobacco distributors and subjobbers effective for tax years beginning after December 31st, 2018. And would provide the Department of Revenue greater authority to refuse to issue or renew a distributor's subjobber license. From 2001 to 2017, cigarette use among high school students declined from 18.1% to 9.6%, an 8.5% drop. That was less pronounced for other tobacco products, which are not stamped and easier to bring into the state, resulting in much lower prices. By reducing the amount of contraband tobacco, the state can help reduce tobacco use by younger Minnesotans. In contrast to conventional tobacco products, the use of vapor products has increased drastically. In 2012, a national survey found that only 3% of high school students had smoked e-cigarettes in the past 30 days, but in Minnesota that number jumped to 19% in 2017, and the Department of Health found that 38% of high school students have tried an e-cigarette. Part of the reason these vapor products are so accessible to a younger audience is their very affordable price. Under current law, some businesses are able to pay the excise tax on nicotine, not the final vapor product, dramatically reducing their tax liability. The FDA issued regulations on vapor products in May of 2016. I wanted to talk a little bit about tobacco smuggling, Mr. Chair. Now, when I'm talking about tobacco smuggling, I'm not talking about cigarettes. Cigarettes are something that is stamped. In this instance, I'm talking about other tobacco products, which is sort of moist snuff and other types of tobacco products. From 2014 to 2016, the Department of Revenue conducted three of its largest seizures on contraband tobacco products. The seized cigars, moist snuff, and loose tobacco worth over $172,000. They were found in trucks, trailers, and storage units, often originating from out of state. These seizures likely represent just a fraction of the total smuggling activity occurring in Minnesota. They occurred mostly by chance during routine traffic stops or unrelated investigations by law enforcement. These seizures show that tobacco smuggling is not only well-organized and lucrative, it can also be relatively easy. This proposal addresses these issues by making needed changes to outdated laws and increasing oversight. The proposal will help ensure that businesses which abide by tax laws are not hurt by bringing contraband into Minnesota. Finally, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to provide a note on vapor. In 2017, tobacco use by young Minnesotans increased for the first time in 17 years, driven by a 49% increase in teen use of e-cigarettes since 2014. According to the Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey, 19.2% of high school students reported they used an e-cigarette in the last 30 days, and that's up by about 13%. New federal regulations from the FDA could dramatically alter the way certain vapor products are manufactured. FDA finalized a rule effective August 8th of 2016 to regulate all tobacco products. These rules deem all vapor products to be tobacco products. One of the provisions of these new federal rules is that manufacturers of vapor products will have to obtain FDA approval for each of the products they sell, which includes submitting detailed ingredient lists. This approval process is anticipated to dramatically curtail the number of vapor retailers acting as manufacturers. Instead, businesses will likely shift towards the larger Minnesota distributors that act as that also act as manufacturers. The taxing structure this proposal creates will align with federal regulations, be more consistent for all taxpayers, and will provide clear guidance to the industry as well as the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, I wanted to move on to Article 6, which is in page 100 of the bill and summarized in page 16 of the summary. Older Minnesotans are often on limited incomes, and the cost of property taxes can cut into seniors' budgets. The Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program provides tax savings to seniors who are having difficulty paying their homestead property taxes. The program limits the amount of property taxes that are eligible, that eligible seniors have to pay to just 3% of their total household incomes, saving eligible Minnesota seniors $1.2 million a year. Right now, in order to be eligible for the benefit, seniors have to own or occupy their homes for 15 years. Governor Dayton's proposal would reduce that requirement to just 5 years and move the application date from July 1st to November 1st, giving Minnesota seniors more time to access this important benefit. We are currently working with Representative Petersburg and Representative Draskowski on a group of reforms to this program that we hope will increase participation. The governor also recommends allowing property owners to qualify for homestead classification by providing an individual tax identification number to an assessor. The Internal Revenue Service issues ITINs in lieu of a Social Security number for some individuals who are required to file a federal tax return and don't have a Social Security number. The current law prevents many taxpayers who own a home from receiving homestead status, even though they meet every other qualification. Residents without homestead status are taxed at a higher class rate and do not qualify for the homestead property tax refund. The intent of the homestead classification is to have homeowners share a smaller amount of the overall tax burden, since they bring value and stability to the city, school district, and county that they live in. And finally, before I turn it over back to the commissioner, I wanted to present the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act Private Lands Timber Harvest Credit. That is in Article 7, which is page 112 of the bill and is summarized on page 16 of the summary. Mr. Chair, this was not as part of the original budget that was released in March. It was released, I believe, last week. And so it was released as an item within the governor's bill. As the governor is trying to think of ways to sort of help people, private landowners, bring timber to market, this was a solution that was put together to try and make more of that happen. This proposal allows individuals, trust, or estate owning at least 20 acres of land in Minnesota to claim a refundable credit from the Department of Natural Resources. The credit is $5 a cord of wood harvested from the landowner's land and sold to a timber mill in Minnesota. In the case of multiple owners of a parcel of land, only one of the owners can be paid the credit, with a maximum credit of $5,000. So this program will cost about $8 million, and so this program will be allowed as long as it is available and extended until 2021.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The final provisions of the governor's tax bill address repealing some of the three of the unaffordable items in last year's tax bill. The governor has proposed repealing these changes because they are unaffordable and unsustainable. Taken together, these three provisions will cost the state over $1.5 billion over the next 10 years. The governor's commitment to a sustainable budget for Minnesota has been unwavering. In 2011, when Governor Dayton took office, there was a $6.2 billion deficit and $1.9 billion owed to our school systems. With good fiscal management and sound budget policies, the governor has successfully turned our state's finances around. The three unaffordable tax cuts passed in 2017 will grow over time and jeopardize our long-term fiscal stability for the state. The first item is the state general levy. The 2017 bill repealed the inflator on the state general levy. This proposal would reinstate the levy, the inflator on the levy, beginning with taxes payable in 2019. The freeze to the levy amount over time disproportionately benefits large building owners the most. Over the next 10 years, the freeze to the state general levy will cost Minnesota over $1 billion in lost revenue. Similar to how local governments change their total levy amount each year, the inflator allows the state general levy to keep pace with the increased costs of public services. Local property taxes have increased at a much higher rate over time than the state general levy. Last year's bill also included a tax cut for businesses as a result of the exclusion of the first $100,000 in value. The governor is not proposing to repeal that change, which is worth over $500 million over 10 years for businesses, and benefits small businesses in greater proportion than removing the inflator. This proposal would reinstate the general levy inflator, which impacts commercial and industrial property as well as seasonal recreational property. By reinstating the inflator, we will improve our state's long-term economic well-being by putting the state's general property tax in line with local property taxes and reduce the likelihood of future deficits by allowing the state general levy to keep pace with the increased cost of public services. The next item is the estate tax subtraction. The governor's proposal would freeze the estate tax exclusion for estates for decedents dying after December 31, 2018 at $2.4 million, the current amount of the exclusion. Prior to last year's bill, only about the wealthiest 1,000 estates in Minnesota had a potential liability for the Minnesota estate tax each year. Family farms and small businesses are already exempt from the estate tax up to $5 million when they pass their farms and businesses on to their heirs. Freezing the estate tax at its exemption at its current level will reduce the regressivity of Minnesota's tax code and will save the state over $250 million in the next 10 years. Finally, the governor is proposing to reinstate the inflator and restore the premium cigar tax rate. The purpose of the 2013 enactment of the cigarette tax increase inflator was to make strategic investments in healthcare, education, jobs, and to reduce smoking in Minnesota, particularly among its youth. As Mr. Cummings has already explained, it has worked. Each year, more than 63,000 Minnesotans die from smoking-related illnesses, and smoking costs more than $3 billion in excess in healthcare costs. Since the increases took effect, smoking has declined, most notably among high school students. Elimination of the inflator on these taxes will make cigarettes and moist snuff more affordable for our youth who are more price sensitive. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for their time today. Governor Dayton's tax bill will continue to focus on families, just as the governor has done throughout his term in office. The governor's tax bills in 2013 and 2014 have resulted in tax relief for over 2.3 million Minnesotans. This tax bill will provide $319 million in tax relief for over 2 million families across the state of Minnesota, and small businesses and farmers would see $186 million in tax cuts. The governor's tax bill will improve families' budgets across the state of Minnesota without risking the stability of the state's budget. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner and Mr. Cummings. I think we've got time for a few member questions here. And please remember that if, when you come up to testify, the people are going to testify, you can actually be for and against the bill. Normally it's you're supporting the bill or you have concerns. Actually, this is an omnibus bill here that you could like parts of it, not like parts of it. So you don't have to limit your testimony to one side or the other. And if you like the bill, please refer to it as House File 4385 as amended, the Davids bill. If you don't like the bill, it's the Governor Dayton's bill. So just and Lieutenant Governor Fischbach. Okay, so with that, we will get into some questions. Chairman Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. Welcome. First of all, I didn't know you used to be on the Federal Election Commission.
I did.
Mr. Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Chairman Garofalo, I used to serve on the Federal Election Commission for 5 years.
And Mr. Chairman, you were appointed by you were appointed by former President George W. Bush.
I was.
And Mr. Chairman, Bowerly. And you were also a staffer for Senator Schumer. How does that work out?
Mr.
It's a question for another time. I'm sorry.
To the bill.
To the bill. I'm sorry. So, Commissioner, a little more tougher question. You say that this bill cuts taxes for 2 million Minnesotans. Your department says that it raised taxes on all 10 deciles, specifically on the working poor. Who's right and who's wrong?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Chair Garofalo, if you are referring to the incident study, I might refer you to the chart one, which looks like page six in the incident study. The combined effect of our current tax, Minnesota's current tax law with no Minnesota care tax included is shown in the darkest line. Our current law with Minnesota care tax, which the provider tax is in effect, and the governor is proposing to extend it, but that extension of the provider tax will not result in a single dollar more in tax being paid by anyone in Minnesota. And so if you compare the middle column to the column C, which is the governor's proposed changes, you will see a reduction in the effective rates by decile across all deciles except for those at the top 10%, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, I respect how this data is broken out, but taxpayers don't have a tax bill pocket and then a health and human services pocket. They got one wallet or one purse. And when I read the data from your department here, it says that it raises taxes in all 10 deciles, and it hits the group of taxpayers that it hits the hardest are the working poor. 13,000 and under, 21,000 and under. And so whether it's in the tax bill or it's in the health and human services bill, how is raising taxes on Minnesotans categorized as a tax cut?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Chair Garofalo, I would agree with you that Minnesotans don't have a separate pocket for particular types of taxes. And right now, the Minnesota care tax is a provider tax is in full effect. And so from taxes paid today, the governor's proposal, including the credit that will provide 2 million Minnesotans with a tax credit of $60 per person on a return, will be a reduction in the taxes that they are paying today. The extension of the provider tax will not result in Minnesotans paying a dollar more than they are paying today in taxes.
Mr. Garofalo. Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, if that's the case, then why does your department's data say that it's a tax increase?
Commissioner Barlow.
Mr. Chair and Chair Garofalo, as I understand this, the table, and I will fully admit that I am not an expert on this, and we would refer you to probably a conversation between your fiscal staff and the staff of the Department of Revenue, is that when you isolate out the Minnesota care tax, that's when you see that change. As we've stated, Minnesota care taxes and provider taxes in full effect, and so the reductions come from the governor's bill, which provide additional tax relief on top of existing taxes.
Chair Grapple.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, and to my DFL colleagues, I guess, you know, there's reasonable people can disagree about the role of government. And if the DFL believes in higher taxes and bigger government for more government services, you should just say it. On the other hand, I support smaller government with lower taxes and fewer government services. But to have the DFL come before us and say that they want lower taxes while advocating for higher taxes, and maintaining that they want an expansion of government services, that's not a philosophy problem. That's a math problem, Mr. Chairman. And so the fact remains from the Department of Revenue's data here that we're seeing some pretty colossal tax increases on the working class. And if I'm given the choice of believing our nonpartisan staff, the Department of Revenue, or an inaccurate headline in the Star Tribune, I'm going to take the Department of Revenue's data. So I'm against these tax increases on the working class, and I would urge my colleagues as we go forward in the legislative process to oppose that as well. Thank you.
So you're against the governor's bill?
Yes. I'm in favor of the chairman's bill, but I'm against the governor's portions.
Let's go to Chair Anderson, and I have Schultz and Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I want to talk to you from kind of the perspective of the state government finance bill. Department of Revenue is under our purview. And earlier this session, I had asked you to provide me with what kind of costs would the department incur if we did not do conformity, what could we expect from that, and any other kind of gymnastics that you would have to do in order for conformity, if you were not to have conformity in place. And when I look at that letter and then this bill, I'm not really seeing where you are conforming on the individual level. And so when I compare the fact that there isn't conformity for individuals, and then with the letter that you provided, in your letter you said, I'm going to quote here what you said. It says, the substantial mismatch between the Minnesota and federal definition of taxable income will add complexity for anyone who files an individual income tax return in the state. And you said Minnesotans may need to hire a tax professional or buy a specific software to prepare their returns. They're going to pay more for tax preparation. They would have to keep separate or additional records on their state taxes. You've got about two pages worth of how this would be a really a bad deal for not just the individuals, but then also you go into talking about the impact to the department themselves. Here you say for the department that this will create challenges before, during, and after the income tax filing system, and it will touch on every aspect of our work, yearly planning, system updates, forms, instructions, and so forth. So can you tell me how you're going to pay for all of that within your budget, given the fact that from the sounds of it, with not having the conformity for the individual side, how can you rectify that with the governor's bill not having that conformity on the individuals? What are we truly doing to the taxpayers of Minnesota? I don't see how this is making it more simple for individuals to file. In fact, it looks like it's making it 10 times more challenging just using your own letter in response.
Commissioner Bowerly?
Chair Davids and Chair Anderson, it does not make it more complicated for Minnesotans to file. We need to respond to the federal tax bill this session in order to make adjustments to our law. The governor's proposal is proposing to put into our law a fundamentally different starting point than the federal tax law. If we do nothing, our code is outdated and is tied to the law that existed at the federal level prior to the federal tax update, the federal tax law changes in December. The governor's proposal would be to put into our Minnesota code a starting point of AGI and then keep our standard deduction, keep our personal exemption, keep all of those itemizations. And so to create a better filing system for Minnesotans, you don't have to conform in whole to the federal changes. That's not the only way to do that. Our letter to you, and we appreciate your interest as chair of our finance committee in the budget of the department and our ability to serve customers, was describing what would happen if there were no legislative action this year, which is very different than what the governor is proposing. The governor is proposing a tax system that is coherent and works for individual taxpayers. It does separate us from the federal tax system, just as the vast majority of other states are separated and use AGI instead of FTI. We're one of six states right now that use FTI instead of AGI, so it would move us much closer to the vast majority of states who do that. And so you will see with this bill there is an administrative cost. It is significantly less than the cost that we outlined for you in our letter to you in terms of implementing this. As the committee is aware, when we administer any tax law changes, there are costs that are incurred by the department to make sure that our tax filing system is up to date, that we can work with vendors and preparers to make sure that they understand those changes. And so, for example, in implementing last year's tax bill, we did that with the additional appropriation that was received from that bill, which we appreciated. And we are working hard to ensure that we provide excellent service to Minnesotans, and we will continue to do that going forward. And, Chair Anderson, I know we will have an opportunity to talk more about this tomorrow, but that's one of the reasons we were disappointed to see a reduction in our operating budget in your near proposal, because there is a lot of work to do this year, regardless of what happens with this legislative session. We're hopeful that we can get to a tax bill that will work for everyone, and there will be costs to implement that as well.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Commissioner, by your own words, you say that every time that we don't do the conformity piece, you're going to have to put in place a new line on that form. So every time that you don't do that, each individual taxpayer will have one separate line that they're going to have as part of that form. In your own words, you say modifying existing income tax and property tax refund forms, schedules, worksheets, and instructions, as well as create several new income tax schedules and instructions. So for each piece that you don't conform to for the individual side, you're going to make it more complex, more taxing, if you will, pun intended, for taxpayers to file their forms. And I just have real concerns about what that means. Not, just setting aside from that, then you have the your own tax incidence study that shows that people are going to be paying more in taxes. As Representative Groffel pointed out, there's only one pocket they take the money from. And so they're going to have to pay higher taxes, plus you're making it more challenging for them to file their taxes. And I just think that's opposite of what we want to do as a state. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any thoughts, Commissioner Barber?
Mr. Chairman and Chair Anderson, I'm sorry if I'm not being clear, but our letter to you explained what would happen if Minnesota's code was not adjusted to deal with the federal tax law changes. And so we would have had we have right now an outdated code. And so essentially Minnesotans would have to essentially calculate their taxes twice, once at the federal level and once at the state level, and then compare those. If we update our tax code and we make changes, including moving us to AGI, we will have more control over our tax system. Minnesotans will be able, it will be essentially the same system that they are using now. They will keep their standard deductions, they will keep their personal exemptions, and all of their itemized deductions. So I want to just be really clear that our letter was discussing the implications for the tax system if Minnesota law were not changed at all.
Chair Anderson.
Well, just, Mr. Chair, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're making a tax system that is 10 times more complicated than we currently have, and we think it's pretty bad now. So I don't think that this is the right approach, and I think it just makes it harder for Minnesotans to file their taxes when we should be going in the other direction and making it easier.
Chair Bowerly? Okay, Chair Bowerly. Commissioner Bowerly. Been a long day already. Let's go to Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Minnesota did not make our taxes more complicated. The President, the Republican Congress made the federal tax bill and made our taxes more complicated to make sure we address the potential tax increases as a result of the federal tax bill. So our commissioner and our Department of Revenue are trying to simplify and make less of an impact, negative impact, on people in Minnesota. So unfortunately, if it has to get more complex, it's to save Minnesota from paying more in taxes. Now, to go back to the earlier point of the Minnesota care tax, people in Minnesota value having accessible and affordable health care. So if the provider tax is sunset and is repealed, people are going to have to pay more for their health care. So they do have only one pocket, and they're going to have to pay a lot more for premiums and health care as a result of higher prices if we repeal the tax, because more people will be uninsured. It'll lead to higher uncompensated care. So it's much more complex than trying to simplify it and saying people will pay higher taxes when we have the Minnesota care tax included. That's just not true. And we cannot simplify it in this committee and talk about health care and the effects of not having that revenue to sustain Minnesota care, which is a program that we've had for a long time that helps a lot of people in Minnesota. And health care access and affordability is the number one issue in Minnesota. So the DFL party, we care about people. We want to make sure they have affordable, accessible health care. And keeping and retaining the Minnesota care provider fee or tax is important because it allows people to get their health care they need.
Any comments on taxes here? Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I want to come back to the tax incident study because we're not reading this correctly, and I think it's really important. The Department of Revenue is looking at calendar year 2019 on this tax incident report that we see in front of us on the governor's tax bill. And in calendar year 2019, the Minnesota care tax is still state law. And so if you, and it doesn't, I don't think, expire until after December 31st of 2019. So if you look at the middle column where it says tax bill alone, and this is really important because I've heard several inaccurate statements made here, and it's important we get this right. In that column where it says tax bill law alone, where it says current law with MnCare tax, you can eliminate the MnCare tax because current law is that. And so what the tax bill is doing, and by the way, this governor's tax bill is just a tax bill. It does not have the extension of the Minnesota care tax. So it's just the tax bill. So if you look at that, in comparison to state law, current law, the tax bill here actually decreases taxes on the bottom 80% of our household incomes, up to $121,000. It cuts taxes according to current law. And on the ninth one, it's even, and the only decile that will see an increase is $174,000 or above. And I looked at the increase that they will receive, and in the federal bill, they will receive tax cuts many times over that. And so I just want to be very clear that the governor's tax bill is very progressive, because the bottom 80% see a tax cut according to state law. Now, all this discussion right now on whether or not the Minnesota CARE tax is extended or not, it doesn't apply to this bill or to the incident report unless you start going into the other columns. But we're looking at just this tax bill. It cuts taxes for the bottom 80% of our working families and senior citizens and farmers. So, Mr. Chair, I want to reserve my right, hopefully, for some comments at the end. I thought this was important to clarify. But I also want to thank you for carrying this bill. I know, you know, it's a courtesy to do that, but I really appreciate you doing that. And so I wanted to cover this because I know we're going to come back to this incident report. And I just want to make clear that the current law is with the Minnesota CARE tax. That's current law. So changes to current law, tax cuts for the bottom 80%.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Metsa? Okay, we'll come back to him later. Chair Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just in response to what we're hearing, yeah, I guess the Democrats' plan does, you know, lower taxes in the same way that Minshew lowered health insurance premiums. And in the same way that you guys cut taxes for farmers by raising taxes on farmers. And in the same way that you didn't spend any money on a Senate office building when you built a new Senate office building across the street. So I guess that's what that makes sense. But, Mr. Chairman and members, I don't understand how raising taxes on the working class is cutting their taxes. I've heard some very unique arguments here. I think the DFL would just be better off making the case as a representative from Duluth did and say, listen, yeah, it raises taxes, but here's the services we want to provide in exchange for raising these taxes. This sort of mismatch, new math sort of philosophy we're seeing from the DFL is borderline amusing, if it wasn't so sad. The reality is the department's own study says when you factor in these bills, it raises taxes on the working class. Don't run away from it. Own it.
Okay, I believe there's a member's name mentioned. We'll go to Representative Schultz, and then what we're going to do is we're going to go to testimony. I still have a list here. They will come back to. So can the department stick around after the Schultz comments? Okay, so you'll be here through the, I think we've got the room till 2, wasn't it? Sure. Okay, Representative Schultz.
Well, let's recall that we wrote a check to the health insurance plans of $542 million and then applied for a waiver for reinsurance and lost another $330 million. And we used funds that were for Minnesota CARE. So the Republicans have a different strategy to raid other funds to pay for health care for people in Minnesota that cannot afford it. And the reason why we have a dedicated fee on providers is because that's what was agreed on to sustain Minnesota CARE. Now, I've brought other ideas to the legislature, other ways to raise revenue. But at least we need to all agree that we need to find dedicated revenue to help people get affordable health care. And I think that the provider tax was a compromise to get there. If we need to revisit other ideas, fine. And then, I mean, for me, not if we end that, Republicans are increasing taxes and taking away health care from people in Minnesota.
Representative Schultz, you know, all those bills you talked about at the first there, those were mine.
I know.
Yeah. We're going to go one more. Representative Hertoff. I carry great bills, don't I? Representative Hertoff, then we're going to go to questions.
Only the best, Mr. Chair.
Your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, as I listen to this debate, we focus a lot about taxes. But in the end, you know, we always have what is the revenue effect in terms of raising taxes, and then we have the incentive effect of the response to raising taxes. And why do all of us get up in the morning and go to work? Why do we do our jobs? What is really the end goal of working? The end goal of working is to accumulate some wealth, to prepare for a comfortable retirement, to prepare for yourself, to take care of yourself. And so most of us work in the private sector, and even the private sector provides the revenue and the jobs for those of us that are in the public sector. But even with regard to the incident study and its own technical notes, it points out that there's a lot of assumptions that are made. And in the case of changing Minnesota's business taxes, this generally will change, according to the incidence report, the marginal rate of taxation is paid by the federal government. But the remainder, in this case, if you're applying the 21% that you think is so egregious in terms of having been lowered, then the burden of the remaining amount of dollars, if Minnesota raises $1,000 of tax on a business, and if the marginal rate's $21, the federal government is paying $210 of that. But the remaining $790 of tax, according to this own study, says that it's shifted in the form of higher consumer prices to workers or lower compensation. So when we're having these talks about taxes, this is the revenue effect that ultimately turns out to be an incentive effect of, now what are you going to do? Now you've got a little bit more from the government, but now the prices for everything that I buy are higher. I think as a good example, we could all probably relate to what has happened just in the last few years of going out for a dining experience. It wasn't long ago you could go to a sit-down restaurant and order an entree on the menu for under $10. You can't do that anymore. And so what good are some of these benefits if everything else you're needing in your life to sustain yourself is eating up your discretionary income? In addition, it notes that with regard to property tax increases, 38% is shifted to the Minnesota consumer, 34% is shifted to Minnesota workers, and less than 1% is borne by the Minnesota owners. So again, that comes back to the fact that business doesn't really pay taxes. It's shifted on to everybody who's a consumer. That's all of us. So we should be very careful about what we're doing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any response, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, I think as we consider the impacts of tax changes on businesses, it is an important consideration, and I think I would just observe what's been happening at the federal level with respect to the changes that were made as a result of the 2017 tax bill. The significant tax cuts for businesses were at least initially anticipated to result in perhaps higher wages for workers, and there were certainly some bonuses distributed at the early stages of it. But the vast majority of those tax cuts are now being given in the form of dividends to shareholders, so they're certainly going to owners. And so I think, unfortunately, we haven't seen the promised benefits to workers that would flow from those tax cuts. So I don't disagree, Representative Hertas, that we should consider the impacts on workers when it comes to changes that are made at the corporate level. It's just difficult for me to precisely identify what those impacts might be.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, Commissioner Bowerly, but I just want to, you know, keep things in perspective, because the vast majority of companies are publicly traded companies. The shareholders, each of us, you know, whoever has any savings account or has investments in a Roth or a IRA or any type of stocks, average people, pension funds, teachers' funds, are invested in the markets, which belong to the people. They're the owners of the companies, ultimately. So this rhetoric about all of it goes to the wealthy simply isn't true. The dividends flow through to the individuals. And we ought to be giving some sanctity to the idea that we should be encouraging business and making it easier to stay in business and not causing massive business failures as a result of the taxing policies, because all of us depend on those opportunities. That's what gives us a real chance at life, is to have access to opportunities. And the more jobs there are, the better it is for all of us.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hertas. Now, I'm just going to go through the list here. Very brief, Representative Dabney.
We have to have fun today, don't we?
We need to get to testifiers that are driven a long way, but go ahead.
Certainly, I'll be brief. You know, we talk about folks as if they have a tax pocket and that's the only place where they spend money. I'll remind you that a few years ago, I believe under Chair Garofalo's leadership, the state of Minnesota decided to borrow 40% of the revenue from our schools every year. And I'll just share a small story. I was out door knocking in a suburban district one year, and I'd learned that that district had been forced to go out on the private market and borrow money to make its payroll, because that was the impact of a 40% hold back on its revenues every year. And I went up to the door, and there was an American flag on a pole out front, and there was a Marine bumper sticker on the car. Door open, gentleman was standing there, and there was two tweenish-looking girls on their laptops and what looked to be grandma, but I didn't ask because that could have gone poorly, with them. And we got talking, and I said, well, you know, under the GOP's insistence of holding back 40% of the state revenue to balance the state's budget, your district has to borrow money to make payroll. And the guy said, I know. It's nuts. The school doesn't have textbooks. I had to go out and buy computers for my girls to be able to do their homework. And I looked at him, and I said, how's that whole no new taxes thing working for you? He said, it's not. It costs me more to go out and buy those laptops. So Minnesotans don't have a tax pocket and an everything else pocket. It all works in together. And when you're able to cut the taxes for 80% of Minnesotans, that's pretty good. And Representative Hertas, while I heard the score of Les Mis in the background as you extolled the broad stockholder ownership, I would urge you to look at who actually owns stock and the far disproportionate amount of stock held by not even the top 10%, but the top 5 or 3 or 2 or 1%. Most of us make a living by working, and we're not getting pay raises, and the federal budget deficit is going up under this federal tax bill. Wages are not, and the folks who actually do the work are going to be most damaged by a tax system that was made more complicated by the GOP on the federal level. The state's just trying to find a way to respond. Thank you.
I think we're close.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, I have Garofalo, Hertas, and Metsa on the list. Thank you, Representative Dabney. So we will, we're going to get in testimony like right now. So, Ms. Madden, can you come save us from ourselves? Okay. Here's how we line up. Ms. Madden, Mr. Dukic, Ann Krisnick, Chris Conry, Jessica Anderson, Molly Moylanen, Paul Egger, Beth Cadoon, Jill Larson, Tracy Fishman, Mary Zweber, Cap O'Rourke, and Tim Kester, Brad Leto, Ward Innes, and Mike Hickey. So let's kind of do like they do in baseball here. We're going to have 2 minutes. You're on the clock. So it's Ms. Madden, Mr. Dukic, and Ms. Krisnick. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill, and particularly in support of provisions that protect Minnesota families, seniors, and people with disabilities from state tax increases as a result of federal conformity. and that make everyday Minnesotans a priority in this year's tax decisions. The federal tax bill creates a complex situation for state tax policy, and conformity could raise taxes on some Minnesotans to pay for tax cuts for others. An estimated 70% of Minnesota families with children would face state tax income tax increases if Minnesota conforms to the federal tax bill's changes in the standard deduction, itemized deductions, and elimination of personal independent exemptions. That includes about half of families with one dependent and 84% of families with two dependents. Governor Dayton's tax plan would protect Minnesota families from these tax increases by maintaining the value of deductions and exemptions that were in place before the federal tax law was passed. In addition, his tax plan would maintain the property tax refunds that Minnesota seniors, people with disabilities, and families with dependents receive. Under conformity, these Minnesotans would see an $84 million reduction in their refunds as a result of the federal tax bill. Instead of allowing federal conformity to create a patchwork of winners and losers among Minnesotans and their families, Governor Dayton's tax plan provides a new personal and dependent tax credit and expands the working family credit. This distributes tax cuts more evenly to about 2 million Minnesota households, and it builds on the working family credit's success in helping working people across the state gain traction in the workforce and supporting their children's health and success at school. Given the considerable uncertainty about the state's future federal funding, we also appreciate that Governor Dayton's tax plan does not erode the state's ability to sustainably fund our schools, health care, public safety, and other critical services that support Minnesota families and build strong communities across the state.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Madden. And so I'm going to say for the record that Ms. Madden supports the Davids tax bill. Have I ever said that before? Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have worked on a couple of bills together.
Yes, that's correct. Awesome. Mr. Dukic, Krisnick, and Connery. Please state your name, who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Dukic. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Research for the Minnesota High Tech Association. And we would like to express our support for the provisions related to funding of the Angel Investment Tax Credit. The Angel Investment Tax Credit is an important tool for stimulating investment in Minnesota's science and technology startups. Since the start of the Angel Investment Tax Credit program in 2010, more than $421 million of private investment in Minnesota startup companies has been tied to the credit. In 2017 alone, 101 Minnesota startups benefited from the Angel Investment Tax Credit, and we were disappointed to see the credit expire at the end of 2017 and are hopeful to see renewed funding for the program along with an extension or removal of its sunset for this year. The program supports companies in high-paying industries like technology and biotech with average annual wages of $95,900, which is 79% higher than the average wage in Minnesota. States like Iowa, North Dakota, Wisconsin, and others all have angel investment tax credit programs. And I'd just like to draw a point of comparison. According to data from PwC and MoneyTree, in the 8 years before the angel investment tax credit was established, Minnesota-based companies raised just over $335 million in seed or early stage funding rounds. And these are funding rounds most likely to be tied to the angel investment tax credit. In the 8 years following the enactment of the angel investment tax credit, Minnesota-based companies raised nearly $626 million in seed or early stage funding rounds. So with that, we'd like to encourage your support for those provisions. However, we would also like to express concerns with the language regarding the data centers. The proposed changes to the data center tax incentive.
Mr. Dukic will take note of the data center. Let's go to Ms. Krisnick, Connery, Anderson. Thank you, sir. And folks, to testify, remember we announced last week, I think that it's 2 minutes, and off we go. And members, if you have questions of any of these folks, please take notes and contact them. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ann Krisnick. I'm the Executive Director of the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We're here to ask that as you fashion your tax bill that you prioritize working families, and especially you keep in mind the impact of federal conformity on Minnesota families with children. In our parishes and communities, we see many Minnesotans struggling. A lot of them are working full-time at low-wage jobs. We see them at our food shelves. They ask for emergency assistance. We hear them talk about the difficult choices between food and medicine. So we appreciate and want to thank the governor for his commitment to working families in the tax bill by not conforming to the federal bill around deductions and exemptions for the inclusion of the $60 per person credit. We also appreciate expansion of the working family credit and preserving the tax refund. But as you craft the bill, please prioritize these struggling Minnesotans and these families. Protect the property tax refund, recognize the importance of expanding the working family credit, and especially think about the financial impact that the federal tax bill, if you conform, has on Minnesota families. So please address that either by not conforming, by creating a child tax credit, or some other approach. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Chris Conry, Jessica Anderson, Molly Moylanen.
Chairman Davids, members of the committee, my name is Chris Conry. I'm here representing Take Action Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you for all your work this year. We believe that House File 4385 gets a lot right. For Take Action Minnesota, our priorities remain the same. We want a tax system that is adequate and progressive. The governor's approach solves problems for families who would pay more due to conformity, while sustaining revenue that the state needs to protect our core investments in healthcare, education, and other public systems that we all rely on. In particular, we support the governor's attempt to lower the taxes of families who would otherwise pay more by moving to the federal adjusted gross income, replicating federal deductions, and targeting additional support to families via the working family credit. We also applaud the governor's approach on the corporate income side. Conforming to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act provisions on repatriation is the right thing to do. Conforming to the base broadeners in GILTI is a needed adaptation to the new federal system. Repealing last year's tobacco estate and general levy cuts is necessary as their costs will continue to expand. And enacting his package of corporate tax reform items is long overdue. In particular, given the sweeping changes enacted in Congress in 2017, the need for the economic substance test provisions has never been greater. It's a tool the department needs to be able to evaluate individual cases and enforce our law. Finally, the governor's plan extends the provider tax as the principal funding source for MinnesotaCare. The 2019 sunset is a problem we can and should solve this year. Left to next year, we will all find ourselves in governing via crisis as 100,000 Minnesotans will have to wonder if they will continue to get care. It's families like these that we will hope you will keep in mind as you make decisions this year. There's a real opportunity here to hold families harmless and commit new one-time corporate income tax revenue to invest in one-time shared public purposes. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Jessica Anderson, Molly, Paul Egger.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Anderson. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. And at our organization, we know that family income affects child outcomes. So, for example, as little as $1,000 in additional family income per year during a child's early years has a statistically significant effect on their later academic performance. And this makes sense. Additional money helps families meet basic needs like housing, food, clothing, and transportation. And when those needs are met, children are in a better position to thrive. These are the children that we'll all rely upon for a strong and robust economy in the future. We have an economic imperative in addition to a moral one to ensure they're set up for success. And that's why we're pleased that Governor Dayton's or Representative Chair David's proposal helps ensure hardworking lower-income families can meet their basic needs. If we conform to the federal tax bill without making any other changes at the state level, many families, as you have heard, that have dependents will see their taxes go up. For example, a married couple with three children making around $30,000, so that's around the poverty level for a family of this size, would see a state tax increase of about $300. Ensuring we update our tax code to maintain personal and dependent exemptions and supporting parents working at lower wages, like in this example family, with an increased working family credit is a fair and balanced approach that we support. This plan puts Minnesota families first by preventing tax increases as a result of conformity, expanding the working family credit, and creating the new personal and dependent credit. We ask you to support these proposals and follow similar principles, supporting Minnesota families so that children can thrive as you put together tax legislation this session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jessica. Let's go to Molly, Paul, and then Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple handouts that didn't make it in time, but if those could be distributed, I would appreciate it.
That's fine if we get the page to pass those out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm Molly Moylan in with Clearway Minnesota and Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation. Our coalition members include the Lung Association, the Heart Association, American Cancer Society, the MMA, and the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce, Mayo, North Point, and many more. We thank the governor for reinstating tobacco taxes cut in last year's bill. High prices, reducing youth access, and cessation services all work together to cut smoking rates. 2013's tobacco tax prevented smoking and motivated quitting in Minnesota. Increases also reduce youth smoking in the near and long term. Absolutely. Last year's tax bill also slashed the tax cap on so-called premium cigars. The governor's bill restores that to $3.50. There's no other product out there with a maximum tax of 50 cents, regardless of retail price. Cigars are just as dangerous as cigarettes and don't deserve special tax treatment. The governor's proposal also includes a number of positive enforcement tools to ensure there are fewer gaps in the tobacco tax impact and compliance issues. Briefly, we do have a concern about one part of the proposal. The bill creates a new separate category and definition for e-cigarettes outside of the tobacco products definition. This new category is called vapor products. Now, nicotine harms the adolescent brain, and in Minnesota, youth use of e-cigarettes jumped nearly 50% between 2014 and 2017. With this in mind, we have two concerns about the proposed change. First, the new definition makes it easier to reduce or eliminate the tax in the future, just like what was done with premium cigars last year. Secondly, the term vapor product is an industry term used to suggest e-cigarette emissions are a mere water vapor. This is untrue. E-cigarettes produce an aerosol of chemicals and particles that include nicotine, heavy metals, formaldehyde, and other carcinogens.
Thank you, Molly.
In conclusion, we support this bill. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Egger, Cadoon, and then Joe Larson. Mr. Egger.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We are continuing to evaluate the governor's tax proposal. However, I appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts with the committee on several provisions affecting homeowners as well as our members. We appreciate the governor's proposal addresses the issue caused by provisions in the federal tax bill which increase the household income amount used to calculate property tax refunds. According to the Department of Revenue's analysis, if this issue is not addressed, state-paid refunds to more than 500,000 homeowners and renters would be reduced beginning in fiscal year 2020. We also appreciate that the governor's proposal preserves several home ownership related tax deductions for items such as property taxes, mortgage interest, home equity loan interest, the chairman's first-time home buyer savings account, and the deduction exclusion for moving expenses. The governor's proposal also includes tax benefits for mortgage debt forgiveness and mortgage insurance premiums, which are two key provisions for homeowners in the federal tax extenders legislation enacted by Congress regularly since 2007. These two items were extended in the Federal Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, which was enacted on February 9, 2018. Finally, Mr. Chair, we do not support the governor's proposal to revisit the statewide business property tax relief that was enacted in 2017. And we're also disappointed that the governor's proposal does not conform to the new federal deduction for certain pass-through income or include a comparable provision that would provide tax relief for sole proprietors such as independent contractors and other pass-through businesses. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. Trigger. And just a quick announcement before we get to Beth Cadoon here. The next meeting is tomorrow morning, and we have House File 4367, House File 1495, House File 3711, House File 4370, House File 4415. And then I think it's been posted, but I apologize to the committee in advance. We scheduled a Thursday meeting for 5 to 7. You know that is very uncharacteristic of me, but because of omnibus bills coming through, we find it necessary to do that. So I apologize in advance. I know, you know where Rosso is? I'd like to let folks kind of get a head start if we can. But with that being said, we'll do what we need to do. Ms. Cadoon, Ms. Larson, Tracy Fishman. Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm here to express our opposition to the very large tax increases proposed by Governor Dayton on our private sector job creators. This will make Minnesota less competitive and more of a tax outlier. Ultimately, as has been discussed, this tax increase on our job creators will negatively impact Minnesota consumers and Minnesota employees. C corporations alone will be seeing over a 20% increase in their corporate tax base of about $528 million in fiscal years 2021. Three-fourths of this by the tax incident study will be borne by Minnesota residents, 38% through, for Minnesota consumers and 34% on Minnesota employees. The pass-through companies under the Department of Tax Incident Studies, it does show a tax increase for our pass-through companies as well, $177 million tax increase on the income tax side, and that does not include the property tax provision that would also impact pass-through companies, also impact small, medium, and large-sized companies as well. It's frankly hard to understand why we're imposing such large tax increases when we have a $329 million surplus, and this is a non-budget year. A few specifics that I don't really have time to get into, but we are opposed to, very opposed to unwinding those provisions signed and negotiated into law in 2017. We're opposed to the changes on the international income tax provision that Ms. Larson will talk about in more detail. We're also very opposed to the computer software exemption for our qualified data centers. We do believe this really kind of puts the state's integrity at stake when you're kind of unwinding some economic development incentives that companies have relied on. The one bright spot we do see in this bill, and we do thank the governor for including, is full conformity with Section 179. Frankly, it's about time that we put this in place for full conformity that does really help small businesses and farmers. So we look forward to seeing a bill that really does move Minnesota forward.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Larson, now, I don't mean to be rude, but I just am. Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Agree with the comments made by Ms. Cadoon with regarding the overall tax increase on employers and the bill. We do oppose that. Again, due to time constraints, I'm just going to focus on a couple of provisions. We do oppose the provisions that propose to increase the tax on income earned outside the U.S. As has been discussed, the federal tax bill moved the federal system from taxing companies based on their worldwide income to tax them on their U.S. income. So the new system is closer to the global norm, and it will actually help improve U.S. and Minnesota companies' competitiveness versus foreign companies. Unlike the previous worldwide federal system, Minnesota has always been a water's edge system, meaning that we've always generally taxed companies based on their U.S. income. This proposal would be a significant departure from our historic treatment of that income. We don't believe that we should use the federal transition to a territorial system as an opportunity to basically switch Minnesota to a worldwide system and start taxing income that wasn't earned in the United States and has no connection to Minnesota. In fact, taxing this non-U.S. income without fairly apportioning it, like this bill does, will likely be challenged in court. And that's because the sales that generated the earnings would not be included in Minnesota's apportionment factor, and so it essentially fails the constitutional requirement that a state has to fairly apportion income earned by a taxpayer. The Commerce Clause also prohibits states from making unconstitutional changes, even if it complies with the federal law. And maybe more importantly than the legal issues are the competitiveness issues. Most states are not going to be adopting these foreign income provisions, and this will make Minnesota even more of an outlier than it already is. This will be a huge tax increase on Minnesota-based companies, and their non-U.S. company competitors don't have this tax disadvantage. We also oppose the economic substance proposals. We think it gives the department too much discretion.
Thank you, Ms.
And
Larson.
The data center limitations. We
thank
post.
You very
thank
much.
You, Mr. Chairman.
We got Tracy Fishman, Mary Zweber, or Zweber? Zweber, okay. And then Cap O'Rourke, Tim Kester. Ms. Fishman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tracy Fishman. I am the Executive Director of Prepare and Prosper. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on the importance of a principled and fair tax bill and in support specifically of the expansion of the Minnesota Working Family Credit and protection of the property tax refund, both as are reflected in House File 4385. We have years of experience preparing tax returns for low and moderate income households. We serve over 13,000 people a year with free tax assistance, return about $25 million in tax refunds, and leverage the expertise of about 550 IRS-certified and trained volunteers, such as Mary's Weber, whom you'll hear from in a moment. So when taxpayers come to us, they work with these volunteers. Tax credits like the Minnesota Working Family Credit can greatly boost a family's income and make a big difference to hardworking families, our communities, and the economy. An expansion of the Minnesota Working Family Credit would enhance the ability of hardworking Minnesotans across the state in every county and in every district to meet basic needs and save for unexpected emergencies and the future. It builds on the documented success of such credits in supporting work, reducing poverty, and improving the health and education of children. We are concerned about the new federal tax law's impact on the Minnesota's tax system and how it could negatively affect low- and moderate-income Minnesotans. We do appreciate Governor Dayton's and Chair David's tax proposal that protects Minnesota families with dependents and populations like seniors, people with disabilities, and others from seeing reductions in their property tax refunds as a result of the federal tax changes. Minnesotans and their families would also benefit from the new personal and dependent credit. As today is the official end of tax season, and we are very busy back at the Prepare and Prosper office, we are greatly preparing for the transition this year, and it's a big one.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Let's go to Ms. Now you got time to go back and get the – you're still preparing them today?
Yeah. Up until about 11:59 tonight.
Finally, some extensions, are we?
That too.
That too. Okay, Ms. Weber.
For the record, my name is Mary Zweber. I'm with Prepare and Prosper. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of provisions in House File 4385 that would strengthen the Minnesota Working Family Credit and protect families from reductions in their property tax refunds. Today, I will complete my 6th year as a volunteer tax preparer for Prepare and Prosper. I work 2 shifts a week at 2 different St. Paul sites, and I also prepare remote tax returns for residents of group and nursing homes. In my years of providing this essential service to low- and moderate-income working families, I am struck with how the Minnesota Working Family Credit makes a difference in many families' finances. I have worked with hundreds of taxpayers who receive the Working Family Credit. Each has their own story how it makes a difference. A mom with 2 children making enough money to qualify for the Working Family Credit breathes a sigh of relief when she learns she will be getting some money back. As preparers, we encourage our customers who are getting money back to save some of it. Yet I often hear that the refund will be used to pay bills, rent, and other basic needs of everyday life. One recent tender response was from a customer who told me that with her refund, she could afford to buy a high school yearbook for her daughter. Preparing taxes 10 hours a week is an incredible opportunity for me to make a difference by working one-on-one with hardworking people. I get tremendous satisfaction telling eligible taxpayers that they are receiving the Working Family Credit. It is an opportunity for them to take pride in their work and realize a boost in their income. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I hope you will support a tax bill that expands Minnesota Working Family Credit and protects the important property tax refund. Lastly, on a more personal note, I'd like to invite any of you to shadow me on a volunteer shift in the future to see the impact of our work in helping hardworking taxpayers claim the credits they've earned. I think you would find it most enlightening. And by the way, we have clinics year-round.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And also, the last 2 witnesses have also provided testimonies in writing. So thank you very much. Cap O'Rourke, Tim Kester.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Kester. I'm the president of the Independent Vapor Retailers of Minnesota and the owner of Smokeless Smoking, a company that manufactures vapor products based out of the Twin Cities. I'm here today to testify about Governor Dayton's proposed changes to the vapor tax or the way vapor products are taxed. My trade organization represents small businesses based out of Minnesota. We're not big tobacco. We don't sell products made by big tobacco. Instead, like I said, we're small businesses that got into this industry out of a desire to help people quit smoking cigarettes. My trade organization represents over 100 vapor businesses in Minnesota that have annual revenues over $80 million and already pay millions of dollars in property income sales and payroll taxes. And this bill would be absolutely devastating to our businesses. It would impose an additional about $6 in tax on products that retail for $15. For my business alone, that would be over an additional $500,000 in tax burden. So the revenues projections that this will raise taxes on of about $1 million is only true to the extent that it expects most of the businesses that my organization represents to close. You don't have to take my word for that. This experiment has been run in other states. A couple of years ago, Pennsylvania passed a similar tax that was at 65% as opposed to 95%, which is in the governor's bill. And in the following year, we saw 125 businesses close their doors. So I urge you to not support the governor's proposed changes to the way paper products are taxed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for this time. Real quickly, the governor's new vapor tax plan, while Mr. Cummings said it is simply a standardization, it is a significant shift in how these products have been taxed. That was first put on in 2010, largely before anyone understood what these products or the implications were. For members' education, we have two types of products in this industry. There's something called the open system and a closed system. Closed systems are products typically sold in gas stations, convenience stores. They are typically made by large tobacco companies, and they have anywhere between 2.4% and upwards of 5% nicotine. This bill will leave those products largely unchanged in their taxation methods. Open systems are products that are made by small business owners and largely sold in vapor shops. These products have nicotine concentrations anywhere from 0 to 0.3 to 0.6 to 0.9 all the way up to 2.4%, but our average nicotine concentration is anywhere between 0.3 and 0.9%. So these products have about half to one-fifth the amount of nicotine as those sold in gas stations. These products would see a significantly higher tax impact. According to the Minnesota Department of Health and Clearway, vapor products are the number one option for Minnesotans looking to quit. Passing this tax would put a tax burden on this option. According to all the data that since vapor products have come onto the market, youth smoking has not only continued to drop, it's continued to drop at a much faster rate. And the notion that raising this tax would keep these products out of students who are price sensitive is a curious statement, in that the products that are unchanged, that are typically the cheapest sold at gas stations, range anywhere from $10 to $30, whereas the products sold in open stores to start
thank
off
you, Mr. O'Rourke. Thank
start at $40. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Leto, Ines, and Hickey. Members, we're going to need to go a little bit over because my list keeps growing. Mr. Leto, and then Mr. Ines, Mr. Hickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and House Tax Committee members. My name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and the Minnesota AFL supports House File 4385 in its entirety, and thanks Chair Davids for carrying the bill. Changing the starting point for federal adjusted gross income at this point is a good idea. It allows most of the same deductions and exemptions before, many deductions that Minnesotans have used over the years, used for years. This, of course, prevents a vast number of taxpayers, especially those with families, from having tax increases due to conformity. The result of that change to the federal adjusted gross income alone means tax cuts for almost 2 million Minnesota individuals and families in conjunction with the Working Families Tax Credit. While reasonable business deductions and expenses are included in this bill, the vast majority of the changes affect workers and their families, unlike the federal tax bill with 90% of the tax cuts to corporations. In addition to the tax cuts for working families with dependents, two important features of House Bill 4385 are worth noting. The first one, I won't spend any time on the Working Families Tax Credit. We support that. But the one that I do also want to mention is the unreimbursed employee travel expenses, or unreimbursed employee expenses, which can amount to hundreds or thousands of dollars for construction workers, especially union construction workers, which we care about, traveling from job to job. This would remain deductible on the Minnesota taxes, even though the federal deduction was eliminated. Federal tax bill is great for corporations with a 40% tax cut, but not so great for everyone else. Corporations have had enough tax breaks. Now it's time for other working families to get tax breaks. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Leto. Mr. Ines Hickey and House.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines here on behalf of Best Buy and Thomson Reuters, and I want to amplify some of the concerns I already heard about the rollback and dilution of the data center provision that the governor's recommending. I think, Chairman, you probably remember this piece of legislation was a collaboration between the current administration and the legislature to construct a data center incentive that was limited in the amount of bureaucracy involved for the business to navigate, that was fairly easy for the state agencies to administer, and provided a robust enough incentive to actually influence locational decisions when it came to data centers. And the evidence is in, and to Deed's credit, they aggressively marketed this provision. They prominently displayed it on their website. They marketed it at the national level at conferences, and it has yielded great results. More than 32 data centers have been built underneath the incentive program, more than $3 billion in investment and growing. So I think it's achieved exactly what it was intended to achieve. And what the administration is trying to do now is basically renegotiate the terms of the deal on the back end. I mean, the businesses who have qualified and been certified by the Department of Employment and Economic Development have done everything within the terms of the statute. They've made the investment. They've built the data center. The data center complies with all the statutory requirements, amount of square footage. It has to be, you know, enhanced security measures, uninterrupted power requirements. So they've satisfied all the agreements on their end of the bargain. And now the state wants to come in because they think the price tag is too high and renegotiate the terms of the agreement. So we have 32 data centers out there who have made a commitment to Minnesota. They've abided by the terms of the agreement, and I think it would be a real mistake to try to renegotiate the deal on the back end and basically dilute the incentive by probably about 50%. And the competition, the jurisdictional competition for these data centers is very intense out there. More than 20 states have similar data center incentives. So we need this tool in the toolbox. I really tip my hat to Deed. They went out and used this tool.
Mr. Ines, if your comments is up, do you know why they like Minnesota so much for data centers?
It's cold.
It's cold, and they can open the window. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ines. Mr. Hickey, Haug, and Hall.
Hi, I'm Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business for the state's major small business group, as you know, with about 11,000 members statewide. Mr. Chairman, I'll start with the positive. I want to thank the administration for finally dealing with the Section 179 issue. We've all been working on this for the longest time, and to do full conformity is really, really appreciated. To get rid of the add-back, the very annoying add-back provision we've had, I've had many calls about that over the years, is a very big positive. Now on to the negative. We clearly don't consider these, quote, corrections. This is backtracking. This is going backward. This is trying to undo things that just got signed into law. But, you know, restoring the inflator and the state general tax is a mistake. You know, that is a positive, very positive provision for all businesses in the future. And stopping the growth of this tax, if we could ever repeal it, which many of us want to, it would be a 20 to 30% reduction. It would make Minnesota instantly competitive on an issue that we're very uncompetitive on, the high rate of taxation on business property taxes. And we're also very opposed to freezing the progression of the exemption on the estate tax at $2.4 million. Mr. Chairman, we're hopelessly out of conformity again now after the federal law, the sweeping federal tax law passed, going to $11 million per person, and we're just trying to get to three. We're hopelessly out of conformity, and stopping the little incremental progression from 2.4 to 3 is a big mistake. These are things that should be left alone. You negotiated those last year, and we need to leave them alone. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Mr. Haug and Hall.
Thank you, Chair Davids and committee members. My name is Eric Haugy. I'm here today on behalf of Homeline, a tenant, a free statewide legal hotline for renters that serves about 15,000 renters throughout the state, and on behalf of those renters and the families that we serve, to express our support for provisions in this bill that address federal tax issues relating to the Minnesota Renters Credit Property Tax Refund. Unless these important fixes are made, many households that are most at need of property tax relief will be unable to benefit from millions of dollars in relief due to the loss of exemptions for seniors, people with disabilities, and families with dependents. It's no secret that the housing market in Minnesota is extremely tight. Renters are seeing very few vacancies, and rents have increased dramatically over the past few years. Many people on fixed incomes are having difficulty making ends meet. That's where the renter's credit comes in. It's timed perfectly for families with kids arriving just in time to help with clothes and school supplies for the new school year, as well as child care for younger siblings. We hear consistently from our clients that the refund goes towards basic needs. Seniors and families spend it within the nearby community on items we all take for granted, such as seasonal clothing needs for our far too lengthy snow season, prescription eyewear, and dental expenses not covered by insurance, maintenance and upkeep on automobiles and other transportation costs, and catching up on overall household expenses. We ask the committee to protect Minnesotans so they're not harmed by the loss of exemptions for their Minnesota property tax refund. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Hoagie. Mr. Max Hall.
All right. Last but not least, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep my comments brief. Max Hall, I'm a legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. We represent 43,000 union members who live and work throughout the state and who are employed by the state and local units of government. So we would like to publicly thank Commissioner Bowerly and, of course, Governor Dayton for proposing a tax plan that actually helps working class, middle class, and working poor Minnesotans. We feel this is a great level of leveling the playing field in terms of Minnesota's tax code. And so with that, we support the changes, the main changes from last year's tax bill that the governor proposes. In terms of the commercial industrial tax, the tobacco tax, the estate tax, and other changes. That will bring additional revenue into our state's general fund, which then we would urge the committees to invest in public services and public employees, given the significant demand on strain for those services. So just with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude. Thank you.
So, well, you can keep going if you're talking for the bill.
In favor of your bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. With that, members, and I apologize for my time management here, but we went a little over. I don't really like to do that. Members, thank you so much for your work today. We will see you tomorrow. Good government all the time. We're